I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the United States has executed 1,432 individuals by lethal injection. Texas leads the nation in executions by lethal injection, having carried out 593 executions since 1982. Today, that number is expected to increase by one. Moses Mendoza is set to be put to death for the murder of Rachel Tolleson. If the courts don't intervene, Mendoza will be given a lethal dose of pentobarbital. In the new book, Secrets of the Killing State, The Untold Story of Lethal Injection, author and legal historian Corina Barrett Lane argues that the lethal injection process isn't as clean and orderly as the state would have you believe. She says it remains a violent means of taking a person's life. She cites controversies over botched executions and drug shortages that have raised ethical and legal concerns about its continued use. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Moses Mendoza was convicted of the 2004 murder of a former high school classmate, 20-year-old Rachel Tolleson. At 6 p.m. tonight, he's expected to be put to death by lethal injection in Huntsville. This would be the third man executed in Texas this year, and he would be number 594. That's the number of people killed by the state of Texas by lethal injection since we began executing people that way. There's lots of ways, though, that a state can put people to death. There are firing squads, hangings, gas chambers, the electric chair, the guillotine. So why does Texas and other states primarily use this delivery system, a lethal dose of pharmaceutical through an IV in order to carry out a court-ordered killing? And what problems come with this method? And sometimes we hear about botched executions. Well, what are those and what makes them botched? Legal historian Corina Barrett Lane writes about that in her new book, Secrets of the Killing State, The Untold Story of Lethal Injection. And Corina, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much, David. Happy to be here.
Well, you seem to be making this case that in order for states like Texas, in order to maintain their execution system that we have as part of our system of justice, that it's important for them to maintain this facade, a facade of an orderly, sterile, humane way of ending the life of a person who's gone through the legal system and had their appeals, and it was determined that this person had to be executed, and we do it in a way that is just and sterile, and everyone seems to be fine with that. And you're saying it's really important that we create this facade, and you are showing that that is a facade, and it really is a hot mess. Is that your argument?
It is, yes. And it goes to the heart of why I started this project in the first place. It was this question of why are states so breathtakingly bad at something that, you know, we use to humanely put our pets down every single day? And the long answer is the book, but the short answer is that lethal injection is nothing like what we think. It is a facade. And so that's the project.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to call in with your questions and comments about the death penalty and lethal injections, how it's used in Texas and elsewhere, you can also send an email to thesource@tpr.org. So I do have to tell you that last year in June, I did witness an execution. Romero Gonzalez, he was executed. He tortured, kidnapped, murdered Bridget Townsend in 2001, and I was able to witness that execution, and it did seem like it was very orderly, and it was they ran that execution like clockwork, and that he took several deep breaths after he was administered the drug and snored, and then he stopped being. It seemed pretty clean to me.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, when scientists started looking at lethal injection, one of the things that happened is that Texas stopped conducting autopsies. So the autopsies are what tell the tale, because the body leaves signs. But, you know, what we know from those autopsies in states that do conduct them is that you can look at a lethal injection and say, oh, you know, exactly as you did. Well, it kind of looks like the guy just fell asleep. Well, that's what the drugs are intended to do. But what you see is oftentimes, and we now have, you know, national studies looking over at over 200 execution autopsies, but what you see is not what you get. Not necessarily what you get. In fact, probably not what you get. 84% of the time, not what you get.
Right. So you're citing an NPR report that looked at the autopsies that they could get of people who had been executed. Texas did not participate. They don't do autopsies, as you said. And when NPR asked them for, like, these autopsies, they said, we don't need autopsies. We know what killed them. We did it. So, but you're saying that what's really going on is not a peaceful death, but actually it is a violent death in which people are, you know, their hearts are being stopped by this lethal injection. They're drowning in their own fluids. I was talking to this AP reporter, Mike Gorinsky. He has witnessed over 400 executions in the state of Texas, and he was observing that when they were executing people, that their fingers were turning purple. And so when he wrote about that in one of his stories, that then now when they execute people, they wrap their fingers in medical gauze and you can't see their fingers turn purple. To me, that goes to two points. One of them is it is a violent death. And the other thing is this secrecy element that you write about, that the state really does not want people to know only what they want them to tell them about these executions.
It's an excellent point and an excellent example, David. And we see this in other states, by the way. This isn't just Texas. I mean, in Tennessee, observers, media, and other witnesses were saying, you know, we're seeing the person's fingers move. You know, that's not what happens when you go down for surgery. In fact, one doctor said, well, if the person, you know, if the person was truly anesthetized and if they're still moving, surgery wouldn't go very well. You know, so this is a very important sign. What happened? Tennessee just started taping their fingers down so you couldn't see it. And so this is a move that we see again and again across states. A lot of these states, by the way, have formally put in their protocols that when an execution starts to go wrong, obviously wrong, in the protocol is close the curtain so people can't see.
Right, because the witnesses are in another room.
Absolutely.
They're looking through a window, and you can just drop the blinds.
Right. And so, you know, it's really interesting because this was, for example, Nebraska tried to use fentanyl, and the guy turned purple, and they lowered the blind. And what media witnesses said was, he started turning purple. People were looking at that. The prison official in the room said something into some, you know, mic or some device. And a second later, the curtain came down. Now, at first, Nebraska had no comment on why the curtain came down. Eventually, under pressure, a spokesperson said, no, actually, we were planning the curtain to come down at that very moment. That was planned all along. And by the way, the 14 minutes in which the curtain was down, they then lowered it or raised the curtain. 14 minutes later, the person was dead. They said, you know, we're not going to tell you what happened in those 14 minutes. We still don't know what happened.
Well, we've never had an execution by fentanyl after that.
Right, so exactly.
So we know that was...
Exactly. You know, we know something went wrong because no state has tried it again, right?
Right. But it seemed like kind of a shot in the dark to try that to begin with. We got to take a break here. The number is 833-877-8255, talking about executions and lethal injection on The Source, and we'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Secrets of the Killing State, The Untold Story of Lethal Injection. That's the name of the book. We're joined by the author, Karina Barrett Lane. She is a legal historian. Execution by electric chair, that's still available in Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia, although they've abolished the death penalty in Virginia in 2021. But gas chamber is still available in some states, firing squad, Utah, South Carolina, Mississippi, Oklahoma, hanging is still technically authorized in New Hampshire, Washington State, Delaware. Texas, you only get one choice, and that's no choice at all. That's the lethal injection. Why is the lethal injection so important? I mean, is it really critical to maintaining the idea that the execution process is not barbaric?
David, that is the best question, because my research started with this question of why can't states get this, you know, quote, right? Like, why are they so bad at this? And by the end, I'm like, why are states sticking with this? Look, they can't get the drugs. And we could talk about Texas, you know, literally smuggling drugs across the border that get seized by the FDA. But they can't get the drugs. They can't get, you know, the qualified medical professionals because of the Hippocratic Oath. They can't get access to the veins. Because as it turns out, you know, aging, ailing former drug users have notoriously bad veins. So this is actually a terrible demographic to use this particular execution method with. And some of these problems are, there's problems behind the problems, right? Like, you're not going to be able to fix this because of drug companies and their policies or the Hippocratic Oath.
Well, we're seeing you doing a good job. We're going to do one tonight in Texas. So, well, I mean, they're not being hindered by these.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. Texas is the capital of capital punishment. But, you know, to your question, my research question morphed into something else, which was, you know, that it's so hard. They're pushing this boulder uphill, and it's not humane. You know, it's just not, you know, and I've even had death penalty supporters read the book and come out and say, yeah, okay, yeah, this is not humane. It's really hard to read the book and come out and say, no, this is an okay method. And so what is it that states, and it's so expensive, right? Like, Arizona just spent $1.5 million on drugs for three executions, and it botched all three in 2022, you know? So it's like, it's so hard. What are they getting out of it? And what I came to conclude is that there is one thing that lethal injection does well, and it is making state executions look like something else, right? It looks like someone is just drifting off to forever sleep.
But everything is kind of, there's a stagecraft going on with the execution. They're using sterile equipment, medical grade equipment. They swab the arm where they're going to put the injection with alcohol, which you would do to somebody to prevent them getting an infection. Not for somebody that you were worried about their health, you know, 15 minutes later, you know, because they'd be dead. You know, there's this whole idea that we're doing a medical procedure, but we're doing it in order to kill someone. It's baffling. It's like, why are we doing this? Obviously, I think everything means something. What are they communicating? Are they trying to tell the public that this is a necessary evil that we have to do in order to protect public safety in Texas or other states? Or what are they really saying by having all of this theater?
I think the theater that comes with Lethal Injection is an aura of competence and control and humanity. You know, doctors are known for their, you know, love for the for humanity. And so you have, you know, this aura of humane, as I say in the book, the white coat enjoys a credibility not associated with the black hood, right? And but it is all stagecraft, right? Like, and I love that you mention, like, why would they ever swab the arm with alcohol before injecting the drugs that will kill someone? There is no reason at all to do that other than stagecraft and to communicate that this, there, you know, this is some sort of medical procedure or something, right? So you don't have to worry about it. We're civilized. You know, we're not taking people out and shooting them. We're civilized. We're using doctors. None of that's true.
Well, there was an 18th century doctor in France who invented a method of execution that he said would be more humane and egalitarian. His name was Dr. Joseph Guillotin, and he created the guillotine. And it was less painful and easier and cleaner than using a sword or an axe on someone's head. But, you know, the idea of the guillotine has morphed into not something that is humane, but something that is brutal and also unjust at times. These things have a way of shifting.
Yeah, and I really like that you mentioned the guillotine, because Dr. Guillotin later stated his regret, and he said, I meant to do something more humane, but what happened was that it actually normalized the death penalty. You know, we had more executions because, like, look, we can do this humanely. And so, you know, he came to express his great regret at that invention. And I think lethal injection is actually a lot like that. Most support for the death penalty in the United States is support in the abstract. You know, the death penalty is like this idea. You agree with it or you disagree with it. And lethal injection keeps the death penalty abstract, right? It allows the political uses to flourish while burying the violence that, you know, state executions entail.
So that's the key point. Having lethal injection and this idea of a careful and sterile process is important for maintaining public opinion for the death penalty. So you see that connected.
Yes, definitely.
So is that why, I mean, are you lobbying? Or is your argument that we should do away with the lethal injection, that we should go towards hanging or firing squads or back to the electric chair in order to embrace the actual visible cruelty and violence of this means of execution? Do you want to do away with the lethal injection?
So this book is not a book where I make an argument and then convince you I'm right. This book is a book where I relentlessly document. There's slightly over 1,000 endnotes, 70 pages worth, but I relentlessly document what the state is doing in our name. And I trust readers. You know, I leave it to readers to say, this is okay with me, or this is not okay with me. And, you know, I think the other thing that it shows again and again is that the state can't be trusted to take that life. You know, most of these discussions about the death penalty are, you know, does this person deserve to die? Well, look, that's only half of the equation. The other is, has the state done what it needs to do to deserve to take that life? And I don't make that argument explicitly.
What would the state have to do to demonstrate that it deserves to take a life?
where do we want to start? We could start with due process. You know, we could start with the death penalty itself. That's not the project. And I say in the intro, this is about how we kill, not whether. But as far as lethal injection goes, I think one key part would be, well, there's several, but one key part is being transparent with what you're doing in the people's name. Another would be following the law. Like, you know, I think when people support the death penalty or support lethal injection, there are presumptions that go in there, you know, that the state is following the law as it's enforcing the law, that we're not torturing people to death, you know, that we're not falsifying prescriptions. Texas has been caught doing that. And so, you know, I think that there are a number of things that just aren't happening. And those conversations start with just knowing what's going on. And so that's my project. That's what I want to do.
Right. Well, I'm really concerned about, before the how we got to the death chamber. How did that prisoner get condemned and end up on death row? Just covering last year the Robert Roberson case, a man from Palestine, Texas, who was convicted of the shaken baby death of his daughter, even though there was a mountain of evidence that proved that that was not actually what happened. He was still very nearly executed by the state of Texas last year, and it wasn't seem like there was the state was very happy to execute. They were enthusiastic to try to execute him despite all of that evidence.
Yeah, this is a recurring theme that we see in these death cases, and it's a special worry that we should have in capital cases. And the problem is, we see this horrible crime, and look, I'm a former prosecutor, you know, so I get it, and I think about victims and all of those things. But we have this really bad crime, and there's all of this pressure. There's pressure on the police. Oh, it's a death case. I better solve it. And I think Texas has one of those going on right now, where the police say, "Yeah, we zeroed in on someone, and you know, maybe there's some other evidence pointing the other way." And prosecutors feel this tremendous pressure to get the conviction in a death case, and so it may not. You know, it may surprise people. It doesn't surprise me, but you know, somewhere between half and two-thirds of all capital cases are reversed somewhere on appeal. And the top two reasons, prosecutorial misconduct and ineffective assistance of counsel. And those are things that I look at it and say, good people on both sides of the aisle would look at those problems and say, oh, wait a minute. You know, this goes to the proviso. Wait a minute. If the state's going to take life, well, prosecutors can't hide evidence. We can't have bad science, right? We can't have sleeping lawyers. That was the case that came out of Texas, you know. And so part of the problem is that in the, you know, just in this verve for death, all of these other things get just run over. Because the person's a bad person, they did this thing, and so nothing else matters. Well, everything else matters. It's the rule of law that matters. It's our humanity that matters.
And then we end up to that moment where you have a person lying down on the gurney with the IV in their arm, and they make a statement and they say, Warden, I'm ready. And then they begin the flow of the drugs. And if all goes well, there is not a botched execution. And when we come back from this break, I'm going to ask you about botched executions. I'm not a fan of that word, botched. It seems like we got to kind of come up with a better phrase, but poorly executed executions doesn't really roll off the tongue very well. Maybe we can come up with something on the fly. But we're going to continue our discussion about Secrets of the Killing State, the untold story of lethal injection with the author Corina Barrett Lane. And you can call in with your questions and comments. Do you think that the death penalty is fair? Do you think that Texas should take another hard look at how it's done? Should it be reserved for absolute? You would think this would be the case. Well, we know for sure that someone actually did the crime. Okay. Well, we don't do that. Okay. But the number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the book Secrets of the Killing State, The Untold Story of Lethal Injection with Corina Barrett Law, the Lane, the author. And let's go to a caller, Marina. And Marina, you're on the air. Hello, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, I'm here. My name's Mariana. I work as a vet tech. And your speaker, she mentioned how they use alcohol as an antiseptic before they place the lethal injection. And I just wanted to make a quick correction. One of the reasons that we use alcohol isn't just because it's an antiseptic. It's a vasodilator, so it makes the veins bigger, making them easier to hit with a syringe, like for blood draws or what have you, or in this case, a lethal injection. But that was just my comment. I just wanted to give some more information.
Well, thank you for that. That's great context to have. Appreciate your expertise in letting us know that. Your reaction to that, Corina?
I think that's a great point. What we know is that these prisoners suffer from vasoconstriction, which our caller probably knows about too. And, you know, accessing those veins is a huge problem. It's been a problem in Texas. It's a problem in every single state that is doing this. I've talked to a number of anesthesiologists and pathologists and emergency room doctors. I've not heard one of them tell me that, talk to me about that. It's not that it's not true. I totally believe you. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that that makes a whole lot of difference, given that these people have really weak veins in the first place.
Well, I mean, if it helps find a vein, it opens up the vein, then yeah, that would make a big difference. So, I mean, it's just more information, and that's good to have.
Yeah, for sure.
So in Texas, you know, you mentioned some of the weird things that have happened when sourcing its execution drug, pentobarbital. What did you mean by that it has been smuggled across the border?
Texas actually placed an order for drugs from a company, ostensibly a pharmaceutical company called Harris Pharma. And Harris Pharma had already been on state's mind and also the FDA, because Harris Pharma actually is just a guy named Chris Harris. And Chris Harris worked for this other pharmaceutical company. He got caught selling drugs, that company's drugs, on the sly to Nebraska. When the company found out, they said, no, those were samples he was supposed to take to Africa, and didn't. He sold them on the sly, so they part ways. So everyone knows, you know, who Chris Harris is and what Harris Pharma is. And the FDA had warned Texas, Arizona, Nebraska, don't do it. It's, you know, he will not, like, those drugs are not admissible in the United States. They don't pass the FDCA controls at the border. And Texas did it anyway. Those drugs were intercepted at the border. So were Arizona's drugs. Interestingly, Texas sued the FDA and for its wrongful seizure of the drugs. And that just, you know, the drugs, I think, went expired, but that all fizzled out. But Texas knowingly placed an order and tried to get into the border drugs that it knew were not admissible across the border.
And these are drugs were coming from India?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Texas now sources its execution drug from a San Antonio-based compounding pharmacy called Right Away Pharmacy and Medical Supply. And so this is a compounding pharmacy that has had a history of issues with with the Texas State Board of Pharmacy for violations, including issues related to sterile drug preparation and record keeping. Also, there was a U.S. Department of Justice filed lawsuit against Right Away alleging that the pharmacy dispensed controlled substances, opioids, without valid prescriptions and failed to maintain accurate records, and that they settled that lawsuit out of court. So there were some questions about whether or not this Right Away outfit was got preferential treatment because they were also supplying the state with its drugs for executions. So is that normal?
Well, I don't think it's normal, but is it usual? So I do write about Right Away in the book. But, you know, there's maybe six or seven compounding pharmacies who have been identified as doing the compounding for executing states in Texas and elsewhere. And every single one of them, every single one has the very problems that you're talking about with Right Away. I do think that states have turned to these compounding pharmacies because of the very fact that you've got shady suppliers in India and they can't get across those drugs across the border. So, you know, what are you going to do? Well, you know, big pharma, the pharmaceutical companies, they have zero interest in selling these. And so you're left with compounding pharmacies and all of the professional organizations representing the compounding pharmacies have said, wait a minute, we make drugs for healing, not for death. This is bad for us. It's also high risk compounding. So you need, the facilities are not generally set up for that. And so, you know, what you're getting is, people off to the side to, you know, you're getting,
the compounding pharmacies, as I understand it, that they can be hit and miss. And in some cases, you know, they're really, really good. And then, but if you there's some of them that are they're not that good. And so we've seen that some of the drugs that they manufactured for Texas, the pentobarbital, you know, there was one case with the execution of Larry Swearingen in 2019. Where he witnesses observed signs of distress, writhing, reports that he was saying he was burning, raised questions about the quality and consistency of the pentobarbital that he had received at that time. I had interviewed Larry Swearingen, and he did not want to be executed. He was convinced that he was innocent. He maintained that the entire time. There was a lot of evidence to support that. So I totally, you know, some people say he was just play acting for the cameras, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I can tell you that in 2018, five of the 13 prisoners that were executed by Texas that year complained of burning sensations, and a sixth one writhed on the gurney. And we later found out that Texas decided to extend the expiration dates on drugs that had been bought, I think it was in 2016. So there were a number of prisoners that sued over that. It did go to trial, and the trial court found that Texas was violating, I think it was four different laws.
And so the glib response is, oh, those drugs are expired. How bad can it be? Are they going to kill them? But, you know, the thing is they lose their potency and they become less effective, and you end up with situations where you're causing pain and distress and not actually executing the individual. And, you know, that's a botched execution.
Yeah, that's really important that you say that, because Texas's response was, well, we tested the drugs for potency, so we're fine. And, you know, one gets the sense that the professionals in the field are just aghast at practices like this, because you had one that came in and said, no, 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 no. Potency testing is what you do when the drug is first produced. That does not test for degradation. So that's not the right, you know, that's not the right test. This particular person who was a pharmaceutical professor said, that's completely unscientific. It's completely incorrect. You're using the wrong test. You know, but people don't necessarily know. And what happened in that particular case is the Texas Court of Appeals said, well, fine, you might have these statutory violations, but told the court you're not to stay any of the executions. And so Texas just executed the plaintiffs one by one. And that was the end of that.
I mean, so when I went to go see the execution of Ramiro Gonzalez, I mean, that's why I went to see whether or not he would be in distress. And I did not see that. But, you know, he was, I mean, he was ready to go. I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah, perhaps so. I'm not entirely sure. I wonder what an autopsy would have shown, because a lot of these autopsies, they're saying, well, the person took some big gasps and then they, quote, snored. Well, you know, and that's what you're saying you saw too. I mean, it's hard to say without an autopsy, but a lot of these times when that's what witnesses are seeing, the autopsy comes back with acute pulmonary edema. And that raises the question of, like, what is a botched execution? I love that you teed that up. So,
Yeah, we'll get into that. I got it. So, but the acute pulmonary edema that's hit their lungs are basically the fine capillaries are being just destroyed, and the body's fluids are flooding into the lungs, and you're choking, drowning on your own fluids. And what may sound like snoring could be something completely different.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we got to take a break here, and our phone lines are open. And we do want to hear about your thoughts about capital punishment execution, how it's carried out in Texas, and whether or not you think it's fair. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll continue our discussion about secrets of the killing state, the untold story of lethal injection, when we come back from this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Having a conversation with author, legal historian, and former prosecutor Corina Barrett Lane, Secrets of the Killing State, The Untold Story of Lethal Injection is her book. Corina, have you ever been able to witness an execution?
No, I haven't. And many people have asked, would you do it? And I don't think I could. Just spending 7 years deep dive into lethal injection and studying executions, you know, deeply across the country was a really dark walk, you know, and so I don't think I have it in me to do it.
Well, I mean, it's interesting who does get to witness the execution and what rules are in place. And I can only talk about in Texas. And so my concern, I want you to talk about this, is how journalists are covering executions and whether or not we're doing an adequate job. But, you know, it's very limited access on who gets to go to the witness the execution. Also, they have the executions in Huntsville at the Walls Unit in the same spot they've been using since 1982, and it's very remote. You know, it's not easy to get to from Houston. It's 70 miles, but from San Antonio and Dallas and other parts, and so it's very limited in which journalists get to go to witness these things. So, do you think that's all also part of the effort by the state to limit information, and they only want certain talking points to come out about the execution?
Well, I do document in the last chapter, which is called The Secrecy Solution. I talk about the media and I talk about how members of the media that have reported graphically what happened in certain botched executions, for Arizona is a really nice example. That person was, you know, writing for, I think it was the Arizona Republic. It's like the top paper, the most
Yeah, the
with the
statewide
widest
newspaper,
circulation.
yeah.
And they had never, that paper had never been denied, you know, always had a seat as the most widely circulated. And after that botched execution, they said no. And the someone higher up in the paper reached out and talked to the administration. And the administration literally said, and I quoted in the book, but so I won't get the words right here, but said, you know, well, if you'd stop reporting that sort of stuff, then maybe this wouldn't be a problem. And I think there were other things that followed from that, and now he has a seat at the table. But, you know, we've seen that in a couple states. I will note that in 2021, Texas didn't allow any media in to watch at all an execution. And afterwards, Texas said, you know, we just made a mistake. We weren't trying to do it. And I take it that was true.
Yeah.
And they said, you know,
they just forgot to bring the media in.
Yeah. Well, then they looked into it and they said, okay, listen, we've studied it. You know, we've looked at this. We simply made a mistake. The ACLU said, we want to see the records, public records. What did you find? And they said, no, we're not telling. And there was some litigation maneuvering back and forth after what the ACLU called 6 months of stonewalling. They finally got the records. And what the records showed was really this astounding lack of training. There were people there were executioners that said, you know, I don't know, I don't think there's a written guidelines, or if there are, there's this manual, but I haven't read it. And so, you know, the ACLU, I think you can find that on the site, but they, you know, they quoted the emails that they found and said, this is really a problem. It, again, it looks fine from a distance. And once you start looking, you really start seeing how problematic this all is.
But the bottom line, and you say this frequently, that they're doing this in all of our names. When mm-hmm. they execute someone in Texas, they're doing it in the name of every Texas legal resident. And they're saying, you know, this is the power of the state being harnessed for this ultimate punishment. And there's a lot of responsibility that should come with that.
Yeah. And people have asked me, well, look, if someone read my book and went through everything and said, yeah, I'm okay with this, I wouldn't have anything more to say. Look, I might, you know, I might come to a different conclusion, but I'm a huge fan of democracy. I'm a constitutional historian. And if people knew and then said, no, I, you know, it's okay if they, you know, violate state and federal laws and do all these things, I would be like, okay, my job is done. But the problem I have is when a state says, you know, we're doing this and people support it, and so we're doing this in your name, and you don't know what you are approving. And you don't know in part because the state has taken steps to make sure you don't know. And in so doing, I think the state knows. You know, look, there might be people that support the death penalty, but not support torturing people to death. You could support the death penalty, but not support breaking state and federal laws when you're trying to enforce the law, right? Like, I mean, that's the project.
In 2015, the legislature passed a law to keep the identities of execution drug suppliers secret. So their explanation, their argument for that is that they want to protect him from potential backlash and threats and boycotts and things like that. But that's the price of doing business. If you're going to be supplying execution drugs, shouldn't your name be out there?
Yeah, I talk about that litigation quite a bit because what Texas was looking for was an exception under the FOIA law. And the exception was, well, you know, and it's, look, there's no exception for controversial transactions, right? The whole point of FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, is, you know, that people should be able to know what the government is doing in their name. And frankly, if it's a controversial transaction, that suggests, you know, more that you should know it, not that you shouldn't know it. So, you know, it would go completely against the whole point of FOIA to be like, oh, this is controversial, so we're just going to bury that. We're just going to protect it. So Texas's defense of the secrecy was, no, People could want to harm these people. That was the exception, was some physical harm. And, the trial court didn't buy it. They put out all their evidence. The trial court said, no. The Court of Appeals even said, yeah, no. The Supreme Court of Texas said, well, there's a chance. And they based it off of this email from a professor in Oklahoma to a compounding pharmacy in Oklahoma, and that Oklahoma pharmacy passed it to Texas officials. So I'm like, wait a minute. And the guy signed his name, so it was just like,
Yeah, but you have to recognize that the Texas Supreme Court is an elected body and it's political. So they put out a lot of decisions that are very suspect or sus, as the kids say these days. So, but okay, lethal injection, a flawed way to kill people by the state of Texas or other states, but it's in a way that it's done in order to maintain the execution machine. So what? What do we? What reforms would you want to see?
I mean, number one is transparency. I think it all goes back to transparency. But, my project is not to tell states how to kill.
Well,
That's
you
just,
raise a problem. This is a problem, folks. Botched executions. This theater that we present. And it's hold propping up the whole execution system. Should we go to firing squads? And then people can't argue. That is what it is. It is the state killing people, or hangings, or we're not going to pretend it's no longer barbaric. It's as barbaric as it seems.
Isn't that interesting to say, we're just not going to pretend that this is barbaric? Again, if you had transparency, I think my job is done. My job is definitely not done. I mean, the book is out, so I guess it is. But my hope is that this will start conversations that I believe have been suppressed by the very fact that lethal injection makes executions, makes state violence out of sight, out of mind, right? It turns the death penalty into just an idea. Well, guess what? It's not just an idea. The state is taking life, killing people on purpose, with other people filing into a room to watch. And I think we need to own that. And if anything, if you're asking, like, well, what is the takeaway? Like I said, I don't make an argument, but I think it would be really hard to read this book and walk away and say, yeah, states should be killing it all. I mean, my closing lines, this is the entire argument, is like two lines at the very end of the book where I quote a policy analyst who says, I'm not saying states shouldn't kill. I'm saying they shouldn't kill if they can't be trusted. And my whole argument, I end up saying, I don't trust these people. Do you? That's it. Like, there's no argument, but like, that is the question
Trusting them with the
that I don't.
power to take human life. We know innocent people have been executed in the state of Texas. We know that, and nothing has changed, and so it will probably happen, continue to happen. Corina Barrett Lane is the author of Secrets of the Killing State: The Untold Story of Lethal Injection. Corina, thank you so much for talking to us.
David, thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.